going on? Jermaine Johnson. Tune in to Turn on the Jets podcast.
Hey, this is Vinny Pasquantino of the Kansas City Royals. Make sure you tune into the Turn on the Jets podcast.
Everybody, welcome back to the Turn the Jets podcast. I'm your host, Will Parkinson, at Will Pollard on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Aaron Rodgers watch, we're in day 1,000, it feels like, at this point. Obviously, last time, Michael Carter joined us, and we talked a little Rodgers and kind of expectations for this team. We're going to get more into the Aaron Rodgers talk here in a moment, but Tyler Brook, who covers the Packers for Acme Packing Company, or Co., whenever how you want to phrase it, has also written the book, The Science of Football. I think he came on right before the Jets smoked the Packers in week 4 or yes. 5, whatever that was. So I guess you're good luck for the Jets fan on the pod. Tyler, how are we doing today?
I'm great. I'm sure as the Packers guy coming on the pod, we don't have too much to talk about, right? There's not a whole lot going on between the Jets and the Packers right about
now. It's weird. I'm self-admittedly have been a diehard Aaron Rodgers fan for a very long time. Anyone that's followed me, probably it's annoying at this. It was annoying at one point. It was like, why you tweet about Rodgers so much? You cover the Jets. It felt like there was a kind of a, when the Jets went and played the Packers even last year, and it felt like, 2 years ago when they went out there for training camp, fan bases kind of were on the same page. It was like, oh, like the Jets fan base is super passionate. Obviously they're not really competition to us. It is ugly on the Twitter streets and between Jets and Packers fan. We'll get to Rodgers first. We didn't break it down too much in last episode. Alan Lazard signs a 4-year, $44 million deal. It's essentially 2 for 22, and a majority of the money is in year 2. I think he's only a $3 or $4 million cap hit this year. You've watched Lazard, obviously, for a couple of years now. On the surface of it, it kind of just feels like him and Corey Davis are swapping, and he just stays a little healthier than Corey Davis. What are your impressions of Lazard, aside from the ayahuasca him and Aaron Rodgers did together?
Well, that celebration was epic when he did that. Honestly, following Lazard's career, I followed him before he was even a Packer at Iowa State. I had a lot of friends that went there when I lived in Chicago, and they're like, you guys, you have to check out this Lazard guy, like big bodied receiver, made a ton of plays. And it's really cool to see how his career has developed, right? Undrafted free agent, had a ton of college production, was actually on the Jaguars practice squad before getting scooped up, and then ended up becoming like a really solid player for the Packers over the years. Never would have expected him to be like the number one receiver in Green Bay, just because that's not his skill set. But like the role he ended up having was incredibly valuable. If you have a team that loves to run the football, you can basically play Lazard as a tight end or an insert blocker. And some of the plays he makes doing that are, pave the way for some explosive runs. So if the Jets really want to get Michael Carter and these like really promising running backs going, like he's going to spring guys loose. As a wide receiver, he's not going to create a ton of separation. But he can push the field vertically. He can come up with contested catches. And I think when you think of that all-around skill set, as long as you have like a true separator, and I think Garrett Wilson can be that guy, it's a really, really good fit.
Yeah, I think Corey Davis is going to count for $13 million this year. Lazard will count for $3 million. He's played under Hackett, catches a bunch of touchdowns in the red zone. The Jets have been atrocious in the red zone. At some point, you're going to have to bring over, of all of Rodgers' buddies, him and I will get to Mercedes Lewis in a second, because there actually is a role for Mercedes Lewis, and if you ask any tight end around the league, he's still probably a top 5 run blocker. He obviously is cooked as a route runner, but Lazard is a guy, like, at least you're gonna get production, right? This isn't a Randall Cobb or somebody else where you're kind of bringing them in for, there's a few moments here or there, but it's more of like, it's more of a locker room, like, we want Rodgers to have buddies. Lazard makes sense. Like, it was a guy that you could convince yourself, even if they weren't getting Rodgers, the Jets probably should have targeted. Is the contract great if they paid all 4 years? Probably not. It probably, like I said, it's a 2-year window they're in. At some level, the Jets are really small at receiver. Garrett Wilson was their biggest receiver, I felt like, last year, a lot of points. And he's like maybe 6 foot on a good day and 180 pounds, right? And Elijah Moore is tiny. Braxton Berrios was small. Like, Corey Davis was big, but would miss every other game. So, like I said, I agree with, the run game is the big portion for that. You want to spring Breece Hall, Michael Carter. You hope he produces in the red zone. You're not looking for Lazard to get 10 targets a game. He's not a wide receiver one. They're not paying him like that either. So, I want to get to Mercedes Lewis quickly, because he's a guy that the Jets have three tight ends that are capable on their roster, right? Like, they've paid Uzama, they've paid Conklin. Conklin was second on the team in yards last year, you know, in receptions and yards and all that stuff. Uzama had some moments. He's obviously, you know, kind of the rah-rah, more of a face than I think maybe he plays as much of a role. Jeremy Ruckert looked promising in his moments. Mercedes Lewis is obviously 100 years old, and he's more of a 38, which is incredible. Like, I don't think we appreciate enough how crazy it is that a 38-year-old tight end is still able to play on good football teams. What's there to expect from Mercedes Lewis? Because, like I mentioned, Tyler Conklin was on. He was like, we all study Mercedes Lewis in the run game still to this day because he's just so good at it. Is that really what you're expecting from him? Because I don't like really get the fit other than he just him and Rodgers are boys and he's Mercedes Lewis.
You're getting a sixth offensive lineman on the field that can occasionally leak out. And he's making plays every once in a while because no one's covering him, right? Like, they just don't expect him to go out into coverage. So, like, there's a role there. And it's funny, like, with the amount of draft scouting I've been doing, every time I watch Darnell Washington, I'm like, there's Mercedes Lewis brought back from, like, Fountain of Youth. That's what you're getting. You're getting a sixth offensive lineman who can leak out. But off the field, I mean, like, the locker room guy, everyone's told me about Mercedes Lewis. Just everyone loves that guy. He was a real catalyst for, like, having that team buy in the past few years. And they really thought they were going to make some pushes because a lot of people were talking about they wanted to win a Super Bowl for Mercedes Lewis, for Big Dog. You'll also notice if he ever scores a touchdown, everyone freaks out on the team. Everyone goes, runs, and starts barking at him. So it's just one of these guys, you know what you're getting, and it's not, I mean, there is a role, but more than anything, you're getting a locker room guy.
Yeah, I think at some level, you got to have guys that know how to win. I think that's been, you know, the Jets got a little bit of that last year. You got some guys in the building, and now you're kind of trying to see it. When you're going for a championship window, you need guys that know, you know, and it could be great for Jeremy Rucker. It could be great. I mean, I don't know how on game days, if they're going to dress four tight ends, what they're going to do. There's a lot to kind of work out there, but
yeah.
I'm on the same page there. There's one name I want to kind of get this. You know, I didn't talk about the Chuck Clark move that the Jets, it was basically, you know, the Ravens were going to cut him. They didn't want to pay him. He plays every snap. He plays everywhere. The Jets do have holes at safety, whether they like to admit it or not. They probably have at least, they need at least one more guy as more of a, you know, kind of that center field, you know, more of a ball hawk type of guy. But impressions of Chuck Clark just being around the league, like, does that move make sense for them? I mean, it's $4 million for a 35 seventh round pick.
I know very little about Chuck Clark. I do know the Packers need a safety, so I've been watching a lot of them. I think the problem, if they're trying to go in the draft, is that just like the athleticism isn't there from what they historically draft. So that's why when that Chuck Clark move happened, a lot of Packers fans were speculating, is that going to be part of like a Rodgers package deal or something like that? But it's weird because both teams need safety help. There's not a lot of options in the draft. And there's
not an athletic class.
No. Outside of maybe Jordan Battle for his size or Sidney Brown out of Illinois, but that kid misses way too many tackles.
That was one of your funnier tweets I've seen in a while. You're like, this is a 14-minute clip of him missing tackles, but it's okay because he tested really well.
And he's a psycho. I mean, I just love the safeties that are willing to throw their face out there. I don't have too many opinions on Chuck Clark. I haven't even bothered to watch him yet. If he ever becomes a Packer, if that does happen, obviously I'll go and check him out.
No, it's a move that, look, it's the Jets needed depth there no matter what. Yeah. It's a 2024 seventh round pick. That's for $3 million. He stays healthy. I think that's kind of like, can you just stay on the field for us at safety? The rest of the time, we're probably just going to be talking Rodgers. So let's start from, I guess, from the Packers' perspective. What'd you make of the scorched earth approach he kind of went with? Were you surprised it had to get to this point? Were you surprised at the, I don't want to say the language, but the way in which he kind of, like, is anything that you felt like he said not true or was true that no one talked about? Like, how did you make, just on the Packer side, nothing to do with the Jets, nothing to do with trade terms, but just, he kind of was like, fuck you, Brian Gutekunst, like, I'm out and it's literally your fault and nobody else's. It kind of is what I read it as.
Yeah, I think nothing he said was new, right? It was the same stuff when that draft day announcement a couple years back came out that he wanted to be traded. And it was a lot of the same stuff, like, you know, not thrilled that the Packers drafted his replacement, not thrilled with the way the veterans have been treated. And like historically with the way the Packers have operated, whether it was under Ted Thompson or Brian Gutekunst, they love to develop internally. And if a guy is seeking money that's outside of like market value, they're just going to let him walk. They're not going to overpay guys. That sucks for like veterans that are super established. That like the guy that always comes to mind for me was Micah Hyde. Phenomenal slot guy, made so many plays, was going to have a huge free agent market, and they just could not afford to pay him. So then he went on to be in a Buffalo Bill and has had a great career there. That's rubbed the wrong way with a lot of veterans, but you know, the Packers aren't the only team that does this. And for them, you know, we can only talk about, yeah, they've only had two Super Bowls with Favre and Rodgers, but they've had consistent long-term success, consistently made the playoffs. And this is just how they've operated as a culture. It sucks for veterans. I get it. I can understand why players like Aaron Rodgers are upset that your friends or guys that are great culture fits don't get to stay there long term. But at the end of the day, football is a business. It sucks. And from like Ted Thompson and Brian Gutekunst's perspectives, I totally get why they do it.
Yeah, look, I think the Rodgers, the trade up, you know, he talked about it on Kyle Brandt's show, and that was the first time he talked about it 2 years ago or 3 years ago. It's now crazy enough. He was pissed. He hasn't, and he's tried to like, it's slowly just, it's not even, the one thing I do like about Rodgers that I think people kind of get misconstrued. He hasn't bashed Jordan Love once. He literally hyped him up the interview and like, there's his, oh, he's a bad teammate. I don't know if he's a bad teammate. I think he's a little self-centered, but most of these guys are pretty self-centered. Tom Brady and the Jimmy Garoppolo thing was pretty horrific at the same time. I mean, like these things happen. They moved on from Jimmy because they went the other way, right? They moved on from Jimmy, and then they ended up having to move on from Tom. I think the Packers are trying to just make that smooth transition, similar to what they did with Favre. I know it's a different scenario. Favre retired and unretired and the whole thing. And Aaron Rodgers was he fell to us in the draft. Now we traded up. There's all these different things. My point is just. Well,
also, Rodgers, like, let's not forget, Rodgers was treated horribly by Favre in that succession plan. And Jordan Love has been on record talking about how much Rodgers has helped him with development. I am convinced for all the faults and all the weaknesses and all the frustrations surrounding Rodgers, he's never taken it out on Love. And he actually has been a good resource for the guy.
Yeah, look, I think we'll see. Are we going to know, you know, how Jordan Love is until maybe week 10, week 12 next year? Maybe we don't even know next year. We have no idea because he's played literally basically no football, you know, for 3 or 4 years now. I just think the Packers perspective that what's tough is they went all in and they really should have just moved on last year because his value was literally insane. He needed a new contract. That team, once they traded Devontae, you knew that team. I don't know. I thought they'd make the playoffs. I didn't think they were a Super Bowl team anymore. And they drafted 1,000 defensive, you know, players in the draft that are all old and all have character concerns. So it was like, what's kind of, it's just the whole process didn't make sense. Giving Aaron Rodgers all unproven rookie small school guys didn't make a lot of sense. There was a lot of things that went on last year, and you know better than anybody, like it was a mess. It's not that I think the Packers moving on from Rodgers is a bad idea. I just think they chose the worst time to do it. But the problem is you have to rip the bandit off eventually, right? Like that's what it comes down to. And this is the time to do it. And they feel, and do you really believe that Rodgers was going to retire and like thought he was going to come back to the Packers and then went into the darkness and was like, oh yeah, I'm actually going to play football and the Packers don't want me anymore? I don't believe that either.
No, not even a little bit. I mean, he was on record before the darkness retreat knowing that trade was a possibility. So that was one of the things I wanted to push back on that Pat McAfee interview when he was like, acted like the Packers wanting to trade him.
Something came out of left
field. No, he said on record that he knew a trade was a possibility. So, you know, there's some stuff he says that I think he likes to ham it up. I have no ill will towards the guy. I mean, I've said this before. I would not be writing about football or doing what I do today if it was not for watching Aaron Rodgers play. Like the guy and the way he operates made me want to learn more about football.
Yeah.
The person is an interesting guy. He's a complicated fella, as the Packers president once said.
Yeah, look, and that's the other thing I wanted to touch on from the Packers' perspective, that this is what is bothering me a little bit when we'll get to kind of the leverage situation and all these things. You can't come out of a girls' JV basketball game and say, like, the guy's gone before you've officially said it and then be like, oh, I'm sworn to secrecy. Like, you shouldn't have said anything to begin with. That's on you. Yeah. And I know there's this whole leverage situation. The Jets need Aaron Rodgers. They want Aaron Rodgers very badly. I guess they don't technically need him, but the way they've kind of gone all in with Hackett and Lazard and all these guys, you kind of need him at this point. And he's already said he wants to go to the Jets. And the Packers do need to trade him. They're not going to pay him $60 million of cash, right? Like, that's just not going to happen. That's why there's not really – no one really has any leverage here. Like, they both need to get it done. You could convince yourself timing-wise. The Jets have leverage more right now because the Packers, I'm sure they want a 2023 pick. And the longer it goes, obviously, then it cuts into the Jets offseason and OTAs and start towards camp. And then the Packers are like, well, now we can hold you hostage. So I know there's that little bit of kind of back and forth. What do you think ends up being ultimately compensation? Because it's not going to be 2 first-round picks, and it's not going to be a 4th-round pick. It's going to be somewhere in between. I've personally gone on the record, and I thought it's either going to be a 2 or a 3 this year. I'm almost leaning more towards it's a 3 this year, and then it's a conditional 1 next year, and Corey Davis, and it's maybe you throw in a day 3 pick, or maybe it's a 4th-rounder or something. So it's like really 2 or 3 picks. It's two basically top 75 picks, a player that kind of replaces Lazard, and maybe it's an additional pick, but I don't think you're getting a firm first round pick, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they sneak one in there maybe next year.
I have to be very careful what I say because my editor, Justice Mosqueda, is making a list of everyone that's anti.
Oh boy, I'm gonna end up 12. On the list.
Packers fans really want 13th pick, right? And I can get why, if this is what's holding it up, why the Packers would want it, right? Would you risk Rodgers retiring and lose out on a 3rd-round pick where the Packers have historically whiffed consistently? If it means the potential of getting the 13th overall pick this year? Absolutely. I totally get why the Packers are holding out. Ultimately, I think what happens, I could see something like a 2nd-round pick this year, a conditional next year. The one caveat that really interests me is doing a conditional for 2025 on if Rodgers plays.
Peter King mentioned that, right? That was really interesting.
It was great. Yeah. I actually loved that. If you can get it all the way up to a 1st-round pick based on how he plays, if he plays and how he performs in 2024, like that's the kind of stuff that interests me because that makes sense and seems fair for both sides. Right. And, you know, for both of us, it's got to be hard thinking of appropriate compensation when you cover one side of this agreement. But when it comes to fairness, a conditional based on him playing in 2024 makes the most sense to me.
As far as Corey Davis,
I think they wait for him to get cut and then pick him up on a cheaper deal because their cap situation's brutal, man. I don't know how they can even afford to take that on.
Yeah, Corey Davis has got the Jets haven't cut him because he's either going to get traded or he's going to get cut. The guy just, you're not going to pay Corey Davis and Alan Lazard a combined $27 million next year. That's just not going to happen.
Can I just say, I loved Corey Davis so much coming out of college. I compared him to Brandon Marshall. Really rooting for him to end up in Green Bay and then just see him succeed so I can finally dust off that old take.
get a thousand targets with Jordan Love.
Yep.
From the Jets perspective, what's either their ceiling? How do you like the fit in New York? Because I don't know if they're going to get Odell. It kind of seems like Odell's going to be a Jet, but it's kind of obviously only have to get Rodgers, which we think is going to happen. There's all these different scenarios, but when you start to go through it, Breece Hall, Michael Carter in the backfield, their offensive line is going to probably add another 1st-round pick on top of a lot of these other guys. They've got Garrett Wilson, Elijah Moore, Lazard, probably could have Odell. Tight end room is good. Like, the scheme he wants, have a top 5 defense. Like, what's the ceiling here? Because you can start to dream a little bit. This might be kind of his best situation he's been in really talent-wise in a while. I know the Packers had those three really strong years, but the 2 really strong years, but I felt like he was playing at such a high level that he kind of made up for a little bit of the deficiencies on the other side of the ball.
Roster-wise, I mean, I love the Jets everywhere besides the offensive line, and I think that is what's going to be huge. I don't think it gets talked about enough. The biggest reason for Rodgers' success throughout his career is even with all the plugging and placing and filling in, the Packers' offensive line has historically been incredible, like the last 2 decades. A lot of credit's coaching staff, the way they scout and develop guys. I mean, it's outrageous. Like, you look at where guys get drafted, and they're like Elton Jenkins is a great example. He was like a late 2nd-round pick, and that was like the most consistent player that you can play on all 5 spots on the offensive line. So there's something to be said for that. I don't know what it's like. Why it's been a while, at least for me, seeing Rodgers play under a questionable offensive line. They got to draft the hell out of that. They got to hit on offensive linemen. I think more than anything, the entire season is going to come down to that because Rodgers is declining. His mobility is not nearly where it used to be because that used to be something that really helped him out. He really struggles to run around now. If you can't get the pass protection set up correctly, it could be kind of rough.
Yeah, look, I don't think anything on his arm is really – it's hard to tell last year because the arm still always looks good, but he kind of nonchalants a lot of throws anyways. And then when you have a broken
thumb – You don't say.
when you have a broken thumb, it's hard to tell. But you could tell last year there's a couple of throws. I go back to there's a couple of throws against the Patriots that are just like, holy shit, man. Like, you still got it. The Jets are very much – the Jets are a piece and a half away in the offensive line, I think, from being a pretty solid unit. I know it's probably, that doesn't mean it's easy to fix though, right? It's, they need a center, whether it's Ben Jones, whether they draft Ben Jones and a rookie in on day two, we'll see there. I think either way they'll have an upgrade there. I think Connor McGovern was a top 20 center, paid like a top eight center. That's obviously never where you want to be. Left tackles, we'll see. Dwayne Brown was good early on in the year last year. He had a torn rotator cuff. You obviously hope. He's 39, though. So, again, you don't – you hope.
I was going to say, I was like, how
– he's the Jets, like, how the Jets are going to go from the youngest roster in the league to the oldest roster very quickly. AVT's obviously coming back. He's a stud. There's
Yeah, he really is.
Lincoln Tomlinson should reform back to at least solid. I don't think they need him to be great. They just need him to not be what he was last year, which, again, I don't know how much is playing next to all these different guys and whatever. Right guard, obviously, AVT and the right tackle. Look, if the Jets draft Broderick Jones or Paris Johnson or Skronsky, whatever, and they get a, and they get Ben Jones, okay, now Mekhi Becton's like your, if he plays, that's amazing. Now all of a sudden you have five first-round picks on your offensive line. You feel great. It's a lot of ifs there. So I'm on the same page as you. I think the weapons look great, but you need to give Rodgers time. You know, any older, any quarterback needs time, especially guys that are, you know, quickly approaching their 40th birthday. I want to ask you kind of quickly about the Packers' expectations. You know, obviously there's a lot to play out here, right? What picks they get, you know, who they draft, who they sign, whatever, and obviously how good Jordan Love is. Is the expectations this division sucks and can we just, can we eke out 9-8 or 10-7 and get in the playoffs? Or is it, it's all about Jordan Love and then we figure it out from there if we have our guy or not?
I think there's zero expectations on this season for Packers fans. I think Detroit is going to be a monster in that division. They're a sleeping giant. You look at the moves they made, and they still have so much draft capital. This is a no expectations, see what Jordan Love can do kind of year. I don't expect playoffs. It could be ugly, depending on how things go. But there's hope. Like, there's a lot of young players on there. You have some pieces to build around. But I think the thing that Packers fans are going to have to prepare for is a lot of guys they've been used to seeing play for years could potentially be on their way out.
Bakhtiari, you know, Aaron Jones, these guys. Like, I don't know what's going to happen after this year.
Yeah. With zero expectations, you can just enjoy the highs. You know, with the expectations last year, it was certainly a frustrating year for fans, just because things weren't going. And I think you'll finally actually get to see what Matt LaFleur's offense looks like in its true form, since Rodgers kind of wanted to do his own thing a lot. I will say this, just from some stuff I heard at the combine, this could be a hot seat year for Matt LaFleur. And I know Packers fans don't want to hear that, but from some of the stuff I've heard, if things don't go well and his vision isn't really like coming to fruition, keep an eye out. It may not be this year, but that seat could be getting warmer.
Yeah, because they've you blame, you know, the COVID game, the NFC title game on, you know, two guys, you know, guys, a certain number 20 who his name shall not be said in Green Bay, obviously based on penalties and that Hail Mary, and then LaFleur obviously kicking instead of going for it there on fourth down. And that was the biggest what if. And then obviously, you know, the special teams was the blame in 21. And then 22, obviously, you blame everyone. What's your, quickly before we wrap here, the Hackett thing's weird because if you look at his career and you just think of his name and you think of last year and maybe some of the stuff in Buffalo early on and other places, it sucked. But then every player loves him. And to be fair, the Packers red zone, and I know you could look at this from two sides, but when he was the offensive coordinator, he, like, from everyone I've asked in around Green Bay, and you could confirm this or tell me if I'm wrong, that the red zone was his thing. And the Packers were historically good in the red zone, like literally one of the best, like some of the best that we'll ever see. What's the deal here? Because I know, like you just mentioned there, that's why I kind of wanted to ask you. Rodgers does a lot of his own stuff, but it is a similar system to what the Jets are running. He had the weird Bortles year where he was a really good OC, but like, I don't know what to expect. It's like, you can either make it like, oh, this is a terrible hire. They just did it for Rodgers, which I guess is going to work. And that's kind of all that matters. Or you could look at it and say, I don't know. Like, maybe he's not terrible. Maybe he's a middle of the pack OC. I don't know.
Just from the things I saw last season from the Jets on the outside, like, there were some locker room issues on that offense with Zach Wilson, right?
Yeah.
Hackett's going to be the guy that brings everyone together. Like, people love that guy. And like you said about the red zone, like, him and Aaron Rodgers will love to get creative with stuff in the red zone. I mean, one of my favorite plays, which ended up getting run again in the Super Bowl, corn dog, as Andy Reid described it, that motion, then cut right back against the motion and throw right to that guy. That play happened on Jalen Ramsey in the playoffs against the Rams with Devontae Adams. Like, it's the kind of creative stuff like that that I think Rodgers and Hackett love to collaborate with. And if, like you said earlier in this pod, like if that was a big problem for the Jets, I totally get why you would want to bring in Hackett.
Yeah, I'm on the same page as you. Obviously, it's probably the most civil discussion you'll see on social media and podcasting for the rest of the week.
But it's because we're friends, so I think that
helps. One last question before we wrap here, and then obviously make sure you guys are checking out Tyler's stuff, Tyler D. Brook on Twitter. Obviously, the book, the pod, articles. When does this happen? My guess is end of this week. I think we get a resolution. It's been a little too quiet.
Please tell me that.
I'm gonna say Saturday at like 6:45 at night. We'll get a McAfee sources, and then it'll be like quickly followed up with Rappaport.
I don't know. I'm running out of memes. I've done Rogers Watch memes every day. We're on day 73. I think I started in the 60s. I'm worried it's going to be draft day. With the Rodgers saga from 2020 on, it was like, you know, 2020, the love pick, 2021, the Rodgers announcement. Last year was a little quieter. Draft day would feel very on-brand.
Jeez, God, no. That I don't want. Like, that'll start to get annoyed because it's not even, I mean, I guess whatever, but I'd like to go into the draft, being able to talk about draft prospects.
I know.
Like that.
Draft pod later today. Miss talking draft.
The time I tried to put in at the combine on draft guys, every 2 seconds was like, I'm like, hey, what do you think of this player? Dude, shut up. What about Rodgers? What about Derek Carr? And I was like, no, I just want, but whatever. It's fun.
I feel the exact same way, man. Draft's my favorite time of the year.
Yeah, it was literally
three of the last 4 years has been Rodgers watch.
Obviously, everyone kind of talks. It was literally me, you, about three or four of the people that cover the Packers, and my brother, and we're just talking. We're like, we haven't said one word about a prospect in 20 minutes. It was certainly an interesting combine. Hopefully, next year, you know, we'll be again back to talking prospects. But appreciate you hopping on. Obviously, you know, unfortunately, we don't get Jets Packers this year. That would have been pretty funny.
Yeah. But we get it preseason, yeah. Don't we?
Yeah, there we. So at least we'll get something. Somehow Rodgers won't play in that game. But appreciate you hopping on. Thanks, you guys, for following Tyler, and we'll be back Friday. Thanks, everybody.